When we started today, I heard myself pointing out to you a subtle energy in the room. And I point it out to you again now. A kind of gentle, subtle ecstasy. Pure, beautiful, attractive, fresh. It's not in the room, it's you. If you find this hard to believe, I understand that. But I say it again, it's not in the room, it's you. What is it? I shall avoid saying ambiguous statements such as, it isn't an it. Which is a true statement, but it doesn't do you any justice, because it's just one of those beguiling statements that go around in ambiguous circles. The Bhagavad Gita mentioned something called the self, and said the self is unaffected, unchanged, by the movements of nature, by the movements of the mind. Another word for self is consciousness. That's also a bit abstract. Another word for consciousness is being. That's quite a pleasant word. We use it often. Another word for that is experiencing. Experiencing itself. Have you ever considered what that is? Not the experiences, but experiencing itself. Because that is something, you see. That is something. When you were a kid, you experienced being a kid. When you were a teenager, you experienced being a teenager. When you're a younger version of yourself, you experience the younger version of yourself. Now, what was experiencing? Was it the mind? No. Because whatever your mind was doing when you were a teenager, and don't try and tell me what it was doing, it might be dodgy information. Because teenage life is a bit dodgy, as it is for parents of teenagers. But whatever your teenage mind was doing, it was being experienced with a D on the end. Now, this is a profound thing. It's simple, but it's very, very profound indeed. I said at the beginning that we live in ignorance. We don't know what we are. So it requires some disciplined inquiry, some spiritual curiosity, some investigation to realize that all my life and right now, something about me is experiencing all this nature, including my moods, including my thoughts, including even the intelligent choice maker in my mind, that discriminating mind, including even that is being experienced. Duh. So what is this power? It's constant and continuous. You have never been without it, for that's impossible. It's been with you the same for all the moments of your entire life. It is the power supporting all this experience and all this nature. It's the power shining through your eyes, hearing through your ears. It's life, living consciousness. Now that, right now, is a huge fundamental element of your experience right now. But it's not noticed, because nature is strong, the mind is dominant, our personality seems to be running the show, the discriminating mind seems to be in charge and working out my life and driving things forward. All that is happening and requires some attention, which I'll speak about before I stop speaking. But I'm pointing out to you that as well as all that, there is something huge and immense which is constantly your experience, and it is the experience in itself. Now, is this something abstract? Is this something strange? Is this something aloof? Of course not. It is intimacy, brightness, the flavour. When we were quiet, when you were tricked into noticing this by chanting the mantra Om, which is a little trick that just brings you into silence, that silence is not a mood. It's not a mood. It's a reality. This is the essence of the Vedanta teachings. Not just the teachings, it's the essence of the experience of those who follow the Vedanta teachings. It's my experience, it's the experience of all who have seriously looked into these teachings throughout for thousands of years. That which can be said to truly be the essence of I itself, the fundamental, ongoing, permanent property of existence, of I, is not your thoughts, is not the thinker, is not the actions, is not what you do. It's this shining, radiant, conscious divinity. To come from the place of not knowing that to the place of knowing that requires some muscles. Because to simply be told it is not sufficient. It needs inquiry, it needs effort, it needs thinking about, it needs perceiving, it needs subtlety of experience. So let's come back to this big question, do we have free will? The Bhagavad Gita told us that nature is doing all this. Cells and atoms, matter, senses. It's all a great engine of action and reaction. It's all happening within you. It feels like your mind, and of course it is the mind related to this body. But the movements that are arising in that are karma, cause and effect, nature. That which perceives, that which sees, that which knows, that which radiates all of that nature with conscious intelligence is the spiritual reality of you. So does that mean I should do nothing then? It's nature's responsible. If I'm fed up, nature's responsible. Nothing to do with me. If I have a bad or oppressive or cruel thought, nothing to do with me. It's nature. It's all nature. No. It depends what the me is. Because as part of this architecture of mind, within the architecture of mind, there is that wisdom. And that wisdom is bound to want to act upon the nature of the mind to improve its qualities, to bring about kindness, to bring about selflessness, to bring about all the pure qualities that all religions speak about across the world, to bring about goodness, to improve and perfect the instrument of mind from within itself. So that which feels in you to be like the choice maker that can choose and affect to try and better themselves, that's important and must be promoted. But that's also nature taking place inside you. It comes down to this. Is there free will in a real philosophical sense? No. Does it feel like there's free will? Absolutely. So should I use that feeling to improve myself? Yes. Because it's part of the architecture of mind. It's the God particle in mind, evolving towards a better total mind, a purer mind, a nicer mind, a fresher mind, a cleaner life, a purer life, a brighter life. And this momentum of evolution is moving in everyone, to some extent. And if in life we come across dark minds, dull minds, cruel minds, difficult minds, then we must respond, practically in the moment, however is necessary. But at the same time, we must also feel in ourselves deep compassion for the experience of that mind. Because to live in a cruel mind is horrible. We must act in defense of purity. Justice must be applied. But at the same time, wise compassion for all those entities struggling in such a way. Ultimately, everyone must improve the mind. This life, the next life, in 1,000 years, in 10,000 years. Coming from a very dark place, the journey will be tough and hard. So some compassion for that, and some encouragement for that. So let's come right back to you personally, and then let's end on these points. There is a mind most dominant in your life, running the day, demonstrating the show. That mind is the nature of the past, rolling forward in you, cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Desires arising in you, you cannot stop in the moment they arise. Thoughts arising in you, you cannot stop in the moment they arise. Intentions arising in you, reactions, responses arising in you, opinions arising in you, judgments arising in you, you cannot stop in the moment they arise. But in that moment of their arising, on the cusp of that moment of their arising, how you respond, not how you react, because they're different, how you respond, then the wisdom in you has some power to discriminate in those responses. And that wisdom should be exercised. And to that extent, you have free will inside that mind to apply efforts into the quality of your responses rather than your habitual reactions. On that note, we'll chant the mantra Om again, finish the talking, have a cup of tea, then come back and have a spiritual conversation and any questions you want to ask.